Welcome to episode 389 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
All right, we are back again after a week off for, for American Thanksgiving, and also due to a somewhat light news week last week. So I enjoyed the week off. Did you have a good week off, Richard?
I actually had a week off. And so, yes, I did enjoy my week off. But you know what happens on a week off? You get much less done than you hope you will.
Oh, that's always true.
I hate that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess it's time to get back into the swing of things. We've got a few news stories to talk about tonight, and I think some interesting things going on in our entertainment centers to talk about at the end of the show. Some very interesting things. So our listeners will definitely want to hang around to the end to hear about that. But first off, we start with a message from Peter, who wrote in to tell us about a new app that he's developed for, I think, our general audience, and that would be people who are or have been Windows Media Center users and are maybe making the switch to Plex or Kodi. I'm not going to read his whole message, but I'm going to give you the beginning of it and then point you at his blog site to get the rest of the details. He says, "I'd like to share with you and the community a tool that I created for myself. My main reason for creating it is that I wanted to have a way of taking Windows Media Center recordings and including them in my Kodi and Plex libraries. As you probably know, there are other tools that can do this job. The only problem is that they rely on services like the TVDB.com. And unfortunately, some of the shows are not present in the TVDB database, or, due to licensing restrictions, are not allowed. For example, Champions League Soccer. So I created MP Converter to overcome this hurdle. It'll take the information about your recordings directly from the WTV files and create the correct file structure and metadata file compatible with Kodi. You can also import these files into your Plex library. There's a tool created by the Plex community that reads the Kodi NFO files, and the file naming convention is compatible with Plex. If you do not want to use the community importer for a standard TV series, Plex will fetch metadata on its own. All you need to do is specify a season number." So that's what this tool is at a high level. So the way this works is he's got a couple of apps that run on your Windows machine, and you want to do all of this as like a scheduled task, and you'll just point this app at your Windows Media Center recorded TV folder. And when new recordings show up, this app will find them, figure out all of the proper metadata for them by pulling it from the WTV files, and then put them into a folder structure for Kodi or Plex and create this NFO metadata file that Kodi uses.
Pretty cool.
It is really cool. It doesn't do commercial skipping, things like that, because he thinks that, you know, he's had lots of issues with commercial skipping in the past. It does do actual conversions. It'll use FFmpeg or the Handbrake CLI tool to do the conversion. So it is going to make your file smaller. It does require some processing, obviously, there too. So you might want to, like I said, you're going to want to set this as a scheduled task, and you're probably going to want to schedule it for the middle of the night or sometime when you know that your home theater PC isn't really being used, because it is going to chew on the processor to make these file conversions. But overall, this tool sounds pretty awesome. It's totally free right now. We will, of course, have a link to it in the show notes for you guys to check out. I haven't had a chance to check this out, but I do want to try it. I've been wanting to do something like this for a lot of the like kid shows that I've recorded on my Windows Media Center PC. So I'll be checking this out. Again, check the link in the show notes for more details. And Peter, thanks for letting us know about this tool, and thank you for making this tool. I think there will be a lot of people in this community that could use this tool, and And hopefully they'll give you a lot of good feedback on how to make it even better.
Yeah, this is really great. I love seeing stuff like this. And he's right. There are lots of tools out there, but they're usually general purpose tools. And something very specialized like this that does a very specific task that is something that I think probably many of our listeners can relate to is a welcome addition.
Well, and one of the things that I like about it is that he's already put in the effort to figuring out how to make a profile for FFmpeg or for Handbrake that'll make a quality conversion of your recorded TV. I've tried doing that in the past, and my conversions always come out looking terrible. So I'm sure his don't, which makes me all the more interested in checking this out.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. So let's move on to a little bit of news for this week. Probably the biggest video news story is some exclusivity news. So a big reason why you might want to finally ditch Chrome and switch to Microsoft Edge. Maybe.
Oh, well, you don't have to ditch Chrome.
Yeah, you don't have to completely ditch it. But the news here is that you are now able to watch Netflix in 4K in Microsoft Edge. And that's the only browser where you can watch Netflix in 4K. And that's kind of cool. You know, I know people now who have 4K TVs or 4K monitors hooked up to their computer. And lots of people like to watch Netflix in a web browser. So to be able to watch Netflix in 4K in your browser is kind of an awesome thing. And the fact that it's Edge that can do it is kind of surprising.
That is quite an awesome thing. It's interesting, the headlines that I saw for this. Some were about how Microsoft had the exclusive availability of this. Others talked about how you could now get Netflix on your browser in 4K, except that it's sequestered to Microsoft Edge.
Sequestered. Come on. It's a browser that everybody has because almost everybody has Windows 10. So it's hard to get out of shape about this. Now, there are a couple of other limitations. The first one is, well, you've obviously got to pay for 4K content on Netflix. And that means paying for their top tier subscription level. To get 4K content, you're going to have to shell out $11.99 a month to Netflix. That's the cost of it in the US. I don't know how much it costs in other countries. I don't even know if they offer 4K content in other countries. But in the US, it's $11.99 a month to get that tier. You'll obviously need a 4K monitor or a 4K TV hooked up to your computer. That's
actually, you specifically
obvious.
Have to have a 4K monitor. If you have something that is bigger than 1080p, but not 4K, this won't work.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that sort of middle ground there, but that's unfortunate, but it, I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's kind of nuts.
Yeah. I wonder what the reason is for that, but okay. And then the other one, and this might be the biggest limiting factor to most people. It certainly is for me. You have to have the latest generation. That's the seventh generation of an Intel Core i processor to be able to do this. So this is the new Kaby Lake processors, which a lot of you probably don't have yet. Now, you will eventually, probably. I mean, lots of these processors are out now. They're in computers that are shipping now. So if you're buying a computer from here on out, it's probably going to have one of these processors. But if you want to do this and you don't have one of those processors, you're kind of out of luck until you upgrade your computer.
This is the thing that disappointed me the most. I have a hard time believing that that specific generation is necessary because of the power to support this. I wonder if there's some optimization in that processor that just makes it a better guaranteed experience for people, and they figure that's the safest path. Because I think this is a huge limiting factor. I don't think there are enough PCs out there. There aren't MacBook Pros out there even. The new MacBook Pros don't have this new processor.
Oh, I didn't realize that. They have the previous generation of Core i processors?
I'll have to double check, but I don't think that they have this new latest processor.
Huh. Interesting. I'm also not sure that the Surface Studio has this processor.
It does not.
And the Surface Books and Surface Pro 4s definitely don't, because they haven't received the new stuff yet. So yeah, there's not a lot of machines out there yet that can do this. But like I said, they will soon. You know, we expect new Surface machines in the spring. They'll almost definitely have these new processors, and more computers as they come out will. So yeah, that's definitely the biggest limiting factor right now, I would say. But either way, it's still cool to see it. And I'm sure some of our listeners will be able to take advantage of this. So let us know how it works out for you guys. Let's move on to some audio news, Richard. We've got an interesting offer here from Microsoft for Groove Music. This is the music service that, you know, we still continue to talk about, but neither you or I use it anymore, at least in terms of a paid music subscription service. But this offer might get some more people willing to check it out. The idea is you can get 4 months of Groove Music, and this is the paid plan, 4 months for free. There's only a couple of stipulations. That is, you have to have never been a customer of Groove Music before. And that also includes Zune or Xbox Music or anything that this has ever been called.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they've all been the same thing. It's just different naming for the platform.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that Zune Music didn't come close to the library or capabilities that you have now in Groove. So including that in there seems a little bit extreme.
Yeah, maybe. So the way this works is if you're a new customer, you go and you sign up for your free month, which anyone can do. But if you do that before the end of this year, when your month is up, they're going to give you another promo code for another 3 months for free. So just a quick recap of what Groove Music is, just in case you don't know. It's a full music subscription service similar to like Spotify, where they've got a giant library of music and you can listen to any of it, anything that they have. It's normally $10 a month and you can listen to it pretty much anywhere. So they have apps on Windows 10, Windows 10 Mobile. It's on iOS and Android. It's on the Xbox, where it supports background music playback. And they've even got that integration with Sonos. So you can play it pretty much anywhere. Now, one other quick stipulation here. If you want to give this a try and you're thinking, awesome, I don't even need to give them any payment info for 4 months, well, that's where you're wrong. You will need to give them a credit card number, because they're hoping that you forget that your 3 months are up, and then they will just start billing you when your 4 months are over.
Yeah, it's still a pretty good deal. I think this is a solid service for people who are pretty deep in the Microsoft content ecosystem. I don't remember. Do you still use this service, or are you exclusively Spotify now?
I'm pretty much exclusively Spotify now. So much so that we actually even stepped up to the Spotify family plan a couple of months ago.
Oh, cool.
But like, I've always wanted to like Groove Music, because I am pretty deep into, you know, the whole Microsoft and right. Windows ecosystem. Like, I would really love to be able to use Groove on my Xbox, but there was always some of my more obscure music that they didn't have. And then the other big limiting factor with Groove is they still don't have a family plan. So, you know, Spotify and Google and Apple Music, they all have family plans, and Groove Music still doesn't. And I think they're going to need to fix that situation in a hurry if they would like Groove Music to survive.
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, that family plan is something that even those services you mentioned kind of took their time in rolling out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have to assume that it's coming at some point.
Sure. But if you take Groove Music all the way back to Zune Music Pass, this is a service that's been around forever, way longer than Apple Music.
Yep. That's a good point.
All right. So why don't we move on to some gaming news this week? I know this is what you're excited about.
Finally.
Okay, Richard. So you may not be a big gamer, but what about virtual reality? Are you into VR at all?
I think it's a cool concept. I think you know that I have really terrible depth perception, largely because my eyes don't focus together. So VR has to be really, really good for me to even get a virtual feeling from it. And I will tell you that the one service that I have tried that does work for me is the Oculus.
Yeah, that makes sense. The Oculus Rift is one of the premier ways of experiencing virtual reality. And Oculus Rift is expanding their partnership with Microsoft. They've already got an interesting partnership in that if you buy an Oculus Rift, you get an Xbox One controller with it so that you can play your games with the controller. Well, this new partnership allows you to play your Xbox One games with an Oculus Rift. Doesn't that sound amazing? All of your Xbox One games are going to be VR.
All of them.
All of them, except not really at all. That would be that would be really cool, but that's not at all what this is. Instead, what they've done is they're releasing a new app on December 12th. I love the name of this app, Richard. It is called Xbox One Streaming to Oculus Rift. That's the name of the app.
Wow.
Yeah.
Their marketing people just continue to amaze me.
So you will download this app on your Windows 10 PC. You will have your Windows 10 PC on the same network as your Xbox One. You will put on your Oculus Rift headset and fire this up. And you will be able to stream your Xbox One content to your Oculus Rift headset. Now, what that means is, no, your games will not be VR where you're looking all over the place and it controls the camera inside of your games. Nope, 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 nope. It's not what it does. Instead, it puts you in one of three immersive VR environments, Richard. You can be in the Citadel or the Retreat or the Dome and play your Xbox One games on a gigantic screen that you see through the Oculus Rift headset. And if you wanted to, you could look around in that giant room and not look at the screen where your game is playing.
Okay.
This is kind of dumb.
It's a start, right? I mean, they have to start somewhere. They have to get people excited about this. I will easily jump to the conclusion that taking an immersive 3D game like the titles that are currently available on the Xbox One and making that work in a VR environment has to be a huge undertaking. It's not a checkbox when you compile.
No, it's not.
So to do this, they have to give developers sufficient time to make something that people are going to be willing to pay for and to buy the additional hardware for stuff like this. So, you know, I don't think this is where we're going to end up. I think we're going to end up with much, much better capabilities. And I think they're going to be a part of the Xbox experience someday.
Yeah.
But this is a start.
Right. I think where we're going is real VR with the Xbox Scorpio, which is a year from now.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I think that this sort of foreshadows is, you know, a few weeks ago, we had the big Windows 10 event where they showed off the Surface Studio and talked about the Windows 10 Creators Update. And while discussing the Creators Update, they mentioned that Windows is going to be building in support for their holographic stuff and their virtual reality stuff, and that Windows 10 would natively support virtual reality headsets and cheaper virtual reality headsets, like down at, I think they said, starting at $300 instead of the Oculus Rift, which I think starts at $700. I would bet that when those roll out and start getting supported in Windows 10, that they will also work with this Xbox One streaming app, and that they won't require, or they'll either rename this app to be like Xbox One VR streaming or something like that, or they'll just do what actually makes sense and just roll it into the Xbox app that's already on Windows 10. So at least then you wouldn't need as expensive of a virtual reality headset to try this.
Right. I really hope that they can get this down to the point where it can even use stuff like the Daydream. I mean, you can buy the Daydream for under $100.
Yep. Yeah, that would be cool. There's just currently no way for things like Daydream and stuff. Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. Like, basically run the Xbox app on your Android phone, stick it in your Daydream visor, and do it like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool. That seems somewhat reasonable. Maybe.
Maybe someday.
Maybe. All right. Only one other gaming news story for you guys. Again, it's pretty much just been a month of video game releases, and then last week was a month of video game deals, and there were some good ones. I hope you guys got a bunch of those. But there is, as we're leading up to a new month, another month of free games for those of you with an Xbox Live Gold subscription. On the Xbox One side, for the month of December, you'll be able to grab Sleeping Dogs. And for the second half of December through the first half of January, you'll be able to pick up Outlast. Outlast looks like a survival horror sort of game, which, Richard, I've never really been into horror games, but I've always been kind of curious and wanted to try them to see how scary they actually are. And now that we're going to get one for free, I might try it. Turn off all the lights.
Interesting.
Play some scary game. Although I won't be able to play it with Jen around because she hates scary things.
You know, it's funny that you talk about this as scary because I think about many of the graphics, the very graphic kind of destructive nature of many of the first person shooters that are out there with aliens and monsters and all kinds of stuff. And I would think of them as falling in the scary category.
Yeah, but a lot of those, the setting is like, you're a soldier and you're trying to win a battle against these things. And that's not as scary of a situation. It's just war. And war is somewhat scary, but it's a different kind of scary.
Yeah.
It's not just a horror, like thriller sort of scariness. Anyway, on the Xbox 360 side, we're getting Outland, which I actually know nothing about for the first half of the month. And then the big one for December is Burnout Paradise for the second half of the month. This was many people's favorite racing series on the Xbox 360. I actually never played any of the Burnout games, but I have lots of friends who just loved them. And so I will definitely be picking up Burnout Paradise. It's a very arcadey, you know, smashing into things sorts of car and racing game. So check that one out in the second half of December. And again, these games are all free with Xbox Live Gold, and all of them are playable on the Xbox One because those 360 games will be backwards compatible.
Cool.
All right, let's move on to a little bit of a mobile story here. A little bit of Windows 10 mobile news. There's a Windows 10 phone that is seen, like, this is so weird. It's hard to even describe. So this phone is called the Moly X1, M-O-L-Y X1. I would pronounce it Molly, but they actually pronounce it Moly. And this phone came out a few months ago, and the company that made it is starting a new Indiegogo campaign to try to sell it to people for less money than what it launched at. I really don't understand this. Yeah, it's really weird. So this is a pretty low-end phone. It's got a Snapdragon 410 processor in it. The camera is not all that great. It's 16 gigs of storage and it's expandable. I mean, like, it's a pretty low to mid-range phone. And I think when it launched, it was $300. Well, now you can jump on Indiegogo. If you're in the first wave of people who attempt to buy this, it'll only be $179, which is a much more reasonable price for a phone with this level of specs. But I just don't get this. Like, this Indiegogo campaign at least started a couple of days ago. And when I went to it tonight preparing for the show, there were only four people so far who had signed up to buy this phone for $179. Because who's buying this? Like, I don't know why you would buy this phone. If you want a low-end Windows phone right now, you could probably buy, like, a 650 XL for cheaper, and it'd probably be a better phone.
So,
I don't get this. It feels like they made this phone, they made a Windows phone in the worst possible year they could have made a phone. They didn't sell enough of them and thought, we need to come up with a creative way to sell the rest of these. so that we don't completely lose our shirts. How about Indiegogo?
Yeah, that sounds exactly like what they're doing. Yeah, it seems like classic fire sale.
I've just never heard of anyone doing a fire sale on Indiegogo or any of these Kickstarter sort of things.
Right.
I don't know.
All right, well, a couple other stories in the industry, and one of those is about one of our favorite new products. Well, not new product, but favorite that it is new. And it, no, new that it's favorite. Anyway, I'm confusing myself. It's getting late. Plex. Plex is what I'm talking about. And Plex has added a bunch of new photo library improvements. Guess what? Plex does photos. I kind of keep forgetting that Plex can do more than just video. It does photos. It does music. I forget about all that stuff because the only thing I'm really using it for is video. But for people who are looking for a potential replacement for their entire media center, if that's what you're looking for, might find these features really helpful. And their photo library capabilities today are okay. They're not great. I think they're kind of like where early media center photo capabilities were. And they're adding some improvements that will make the importing of photographs faster, that will make the browser experience, or the browsing experience rather, on the browser and in iOS and Android apps better. And they are going to be improving that even more across more platforms. I hope we see those improvements go to their 10-foot interface streaming apps, because that would be nice. But the big thing here is an automatic tagging capability. So just like when you upload photographs to something like OneDrive, where OneDrive automatically categorizes your photographs by keywords, they too are adding automatic tagging, labeling to your photographs that will do a similar thing. And they're doing this by using a third-party service. So basically, when you upload your photograph, they're going to take a small 25K version of that image. They're going to shrink it down to a 25K version, send that off to this third-party trusted vendor that they're working with that will analyze it. This vendor uses machine learning to understand what's in the photographs and be able to identify things. It'll identify tags and send them back to Plex. Plex puts those tags in your library. It doesn't attach them to the photograph itself. And then the third party gets rid of the photograph that they were sent. They don't keep any information about the photographs or you or anything like that. This is a pretty cool thing. I like this capability. I'm not, I guess an equivalent would be if you were to look at your photographs using these categories on the OneDrive app that exists on the Xbox. But I don't even know if that app exposes those categories the way that the, say, tablet and web apps do. Do you, Josh?
I don't remember because I don't use it very often.
So I think this is a nice feature. I think that this is something that everybody will definitely get some benefit from. However, you need to be a Plex Pass subscriber to get the auto tagging feature to be able to take advantage of that. Now, as we know, many of the features that come in as Plex Pass subscriber exclusives ultimately get rolled into the overall Plex product. But for now, they're reserving that particular feature, the tagging feature, for their subscribers. Now, one note here, and that is that if you are a DVR beta user with Plex, and I suspect that quite a few of our listeners who use Plex may be, you should not be accepting any upgrades that Plex prompts you to download until the beta is over for the DVR. Because if you do, you will get rid of, meaning lose, your DVR capabilities. The DVR beta is on a separate branch from the work that they're doing in the product that they release to production. So you do not want to take advantage of this feature if you're using the DVR beta and you like it. If you've been using the DVR beta and you've decided, not for me, and this is a feature that is for you, then have at it. Otherwise, I would wait until the DVR features are rolled into the overall product, and then everybody can take advantage of all of those features.
Richard, like you, I had basically forgotten that Plex has support for photo libraries. It's definitely not the main reason I use it, but this feature has me really curious about actually setting this up, along with another feature that I believe is only available for Plex Pass subscribers, and that is the ability to have your phone automatically upload the photos that you take on your phone to your Plex server.
Yes.
That's kind of awesome.
That is kind of awesome. And that is also a Plex Pass subscriber feature only. That, I think, is particularly interesting in that what you essentially could end up with is a central tagging and showcase for any device you have theoretically in your household that's taking pictures. That's right. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, like you though, I'm using that DVR beta, so I'm going to have to wait until this stuff gets all rolled together, but I think I will be experimenting with this sooner rather than later, hopefully, because this sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited about it. We have a post that talks a little bit about it out on the DMZ.
Yep. All right. One more news story to talk about this week. And that is that AT&T has rolled out their DirecTV Now service. This is a service that we've been expecting for weeks now. And tomorrow, as of the day that we're recording this, on November 30th, they're launching DirecTV Now. Basically, if you know what Sling TV is or PlayStation Vue, it's like that. This is a completely over-the-internet pay TV service. You give them X number of dollars a month, you get a whole bunch of channels that you can watch through apps on most of your devices. It starts at $35 a month, which will get you about 60 channels. It includes a lot of the most common ones, ESPN, AMC, CNN, Fox News, lots of those pretty obvious common choices that you'd get on PlayStation Vue and Sling TV. You can upgrade that. They've got packages that have 80 channels and 120 channels. Those are $50 and $70 a month, respectively. Then, of course, you need to know, how do you watch this? Well, again, it's all over the internet, so you're going to need an app. And they're going to have apps for Apple TV, Fire TV, iOS, Android. You can Chromecast it on Android devices. They'll support Chromecast from iOS next year. You can also watch it in Internet Explorer, Chrome, or Safari. You're probably noticing there's a couple of big missing devices in there. There's not a Roku, there's not Xbox, and there's no PlayStation apps, although they say Roku is coming next year. There's also a couple of major content providers that aren't available. There's no CBS. There's no Showtime.
Our content's more valuable. We're not going to make it available with these packages. You have to pay separately for that.
Let me know how you really feel, Richard.
Good old Viacom CBS.
Yeah, exactly.
At it again.
Yep. So there's also nothing like a DVR for this. And you only get two streams at a time, which might be okay for a lot of people. It might not work if you have a lot of people in your house, though. And I think a lot of people, when they think DirecTV, one of the first things they think of is the NFL Sunday Ticket. Well, no Sunday Ticket with this package either. You're not going to be able to get that online through DirecTV Now. There are a couple of other advantages, though. Let's say you're also an AT&T wireless customer. Well, they've got those iOS and Android apps, and if you use your AT&T wireless data to watch DirecTV Now, it won't count against your data cap for your mobile phone. Now, a lot of you people are going to say, but what about net neutrality? Isn't that against net neutrality? Well, no, it's technically not. When our current net neutrality regulations went into effect a couple of years ago, they specifically excluded mobile data because that was the argument was that that was a market segment that was just too young and still growing, and they didn't want to stifle innovation by limiting what providers could do on mobile networks. So,
well, and besides, all those limits are going to get away shortly anyway.
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? So, there's also some cool promotions going on here. If you want to pay for 1 month ahead of time, you can get an Amazon Fire TV stick with a remote for free. You can pay for 3 months up front and get an Apple TV. Although I didn't find out, is this the latest Apple TV? Because isn't the latest Apple TV like $150?
It has to be, because that's the only one that allows for third-party apps. Oh. So, yeah.
So this kind of sounds like a way to get a cheap Apple TV.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. And then the other promotion that they're running is, like we said, their base package gets you 60 channels for $35 a month. But if you sign up soon, and they haven't said when this is going to end, you can get the package that's normally $60 a month for $35 a month forever, asterisk.
Unlimited, asterisk.
Right. Yeah. I'm not even going to try and remember what their clever wording was around that. But basically, you'll get that introductory rate for a long time, but we don't know how long. So how does this sound to you, Richard? Like, is this something that you would consider using?
It's not something that I would consider using for a number of reasons, but I like it. I think it lived up to the expectations that people had for it. I am disappointed about some of the platform gaps and kind of, as you can tell, furious about the omission of CBS. I really think that these companies need to start playing hardball with these companies, with these providers, and help them realize that, you know what? Turns out no one's watching Big Brother over the top. Maybe you should give up and just join the providers that are making content available in a reasonable way. So I hope that that problem gets fixed. We're going to see things like that. We're going to see holdouts like that on each of these services. As compared to, say, Sling TV and I think it's called PlayStation View.
Yep.
Or maybe just View now.
No, it's PlayStation View.
This seems to be quite competitive and potentially better because of some of the benefits to AT&T customers. To me, the fact that it's from AT&T is a big negative, because I just have such a bad taste in my mouth from past experiences as an AT&T customer.
Hmm. Yeah, for me, this isn't something I'm all that interested in either. I'm now a cord cutter, as we're going to get into a little bit later. But the fact that they don't have an Xbox app means that I basically couldn't really use this in my living room. I don't have, I suppose I could Chromecast, but that's not something I want to do for everything. And I'm not going to get an Apple TV or Fire TV. No thanks. So that's a big problem. And it's as expensive as cable is for me. So why would I do that? I think, you know, bundled internet and cable for basic cable, which would get me most or all of these channels, would be about $35 a month for me. So why would I do that? No thanks. Right.
I think one of the things that people just need to start to understand is that if you don't want to pay individual networks for their individual apps with their unique content, then the only other way to do this is through bundles, because these content providers refuse to play with the delivery channels unless they bundle packages of their networks to their channels together. They're not willing to, for example, just give ESPN without everything else, or just give Disney without all the other kids' channels. They won't do it.
Right.
And so we're stuck with this model in the current economic environment that we have with these providers.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's it for our news tonight. Richard, let's jump into what's going on in our entertainment centers.
I mentioned I had a week off, and we've been gone for 2 weeks, so lots and lots. I've been actually up to a lot in my entertainment center. I've been watching stuff, but I've been doing a lot as well. I did a little bit of house cleaning. I managed to dump some old media, got rid of some magazines, threw away a big, huge pile of first generation Xbox CDs. Like, wow. Why did I still have them?
That's
they
awesome.
Went out in recycling. I also redid my crazy network wiring mess up in my attic. I had tweeted a picture of what a mess that was a couple of weeks ago. And then after this past weekend, tweeted the new picture. And I think it's a vast improvement. I at least can tell what wire goes to what. And I now have some spare slots to plug some additional items in there. But here's something really interesting, Josh, and I think you'll get a kick out of this. I have more than 1 8-port switches worth of hubs.
Oh my gosh.
Up in my attic.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. That is crazy. Now, part of that is because I have a bunch of stuff that I test and use and things like that. But it's, you know, you get Hue bulbs. You get some other kind of connected bulb thing. You maybe have a hub for a controller like a Wink or a SmartThings or something else. Each of these products comes with its own thing that needs to be plugged in your network somewhere. And I want them all together. So they're all up off of my main switching system with my router. I also made the perhaps foolish decision to mess with my perfectly functional Drobo and replace a fan in it that was annoyingly loud. And I could have taken it and I could have just put it in a closet somewhere, but I wanted to fix the fan. And I found some instructions online on how to do that. And I've done this before. I've replaced fans in Drobos in the past without instructions. I just took it apart and figured out how to do it. So I figured I can do this. So I did. And I put a new fan in it, put it all together, put it up on my shelf in my server closet, which is off of my office. And the next morning, woke up to a dead Drobo with lights blinking. And I probably could have cooked breakfast on it for how hot
man.
It was.
Because
the fan died.
Ugh.
So I'm like, please tell me I didn't fry my discs. Please, please, please tell me it didn't get that bad. And it didn't. I let it cool down. It worked again. I replaced the fan with another different fan. I thought maybe it was the fan. Same thing happened. This time I'm like, all right, well, I don't have a fan that's the exact spec of what was in there before. So I will buy an exact replica of the fan that it shipped with and just deal with the fact that in another 3 years, it's going to get loud and I'll have to replace it too. Put that in. Within an hour, it wasn't working anymore. So clearly, in the process of trying to fix this, I managed to break something like a temperature sensor or something. I don't know how, but I did. So now it is a part on my desk for a fourth time. And I am going to hack this thing together with an externally powered fan that I'm going to fish the wire in through the case that I busted a hole through to be able to do this and make this thing work again. Because I like my Drobo. I don't want to get rid of my Drobo. And I even reached out to Dave McCabe and said, you know, I may have to give up on Drobo. Do you have a Synology that you would recommend as a good substitute for this one that I have? But I don't want to have to give it up if I can get it working. So next time we talk, I will have news about whether it is or isn't working with my external fan hack. I'm hoping it will.
So how are you powering the external fan?
What I ended up buying is a case fan that is designed to work on something like an entertainment center cabinet. So it's the same specs in terms of measurement and a grill and everything for and how quiet it is for a regular case fan that you'd put in a computer, but it's powered with regular 120 voltage.
Oh.
So I'm just going to fish the cable, which is detachable, out through the back of the case, and I've already punched a hole in it to do that, and I'm going to power it separately from the Drobo itself.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It's crazy, but it should work in theory. We'll see. I do want to credit the person on the web who provided instructions to be able to do this. Now, I have to assume I screwed them up, not this person's fault. But the instructions on how to take the thing apart were really, really helpful for me. And I will try and get a link in the show notes for that in case anyone else is interested in killing their own Drobo. Now, I have been watching a bunch of TV. I am still keeping up with Justified as the folks at Cord Killers run through that. I am waiting on each next new episode for This Is Us. I love that show. I am enjoying Westworld still very much. I think that's been some really interesting storytelling there. I started The Crown, which is a new series on Netflix about the young days of the current queen. And it's a very interesting, supposedly docudrama of her days before and then shortly after the coronation. And I've been enjoying that a lot. We've both been watching that. So that's been really cool. And then I also started, or I guess I should say, I watched the premiere of Conviction, which is a drama on ABC that is basically around this concept of, we know we have all these people in prison who don't deserve to be there. And each episode is about trying to get someone out, trying to prove that the person who's in jail doesn't belong in jail. If only it took 50 minutes to be able to do that, we could solve a lot of problems in this society.
Is this all fiction?
It is fiction, though, as I understand it, many of the storylines have been adapted from actual news stories, kind of like some of the CSI and NCIS storylines.
Okay.
Also watching Arrow and The Flash, Hawaii Five-O, and Shameless, which is almost at the end of its run. I finished the show I was talking about before, Kitchen Confidential, and I decided to get back to and finish Man in the High Castle, because its dystopian future or past or whatever it was just seemed appropriate to be watching right now. I am still loving National Geographic's Mars. That was just on again last night as of the night that we're recording. And I think that that is a really interesting series. I think it's 6 parts. It's halfway through now. Catch that on National Geographic. And you can catch up online. And I watched the movie Kubo and the Two Strings. I didn't really know much about this movie. It has a 99 on the tomato meter.
What?
Yeah. It was great.
Huh.
It was really, really good. So I would recommend, if you haven't heard about it, and you likely haven't, go out to YouTube and check out the trailer for this, because it's really interesting, and I think it's at least worth a rental. Very cool movie.
Is that available in 4K?
I do not believe so. I was not able to buy it in a 4K disc.
Okay.
I was only able to buy it on Blu-ray.
Okay.
So, yeah. Speaking of 4K, I told you I'm getting the itch, right?
Oh, yeah. You've had that itch for a while.
This past weekend, you know, the holiday shopping weekend that just passed.
Uh-huh.
You know, all the specials they had on the Xbox?
Oh, yeah, lots of them.
Yeah, well, thanks to Dave Zatz, I found out that I could get a Target gift card in addition to the discounts that they were offering on the bundles if I bought an Xbox One S. So I did.
And that was what, like Sunday? Because I saw your tweets on Friday, where you were like, I went to Best Buy, I have to resist the urge to get an Xbox. And then, you know, an hour later, I resisted the urge, I didn't buy an Xbox.
I was so proud of myself. And then 2 days later, nope. 2 days later, I'm there buying a new Xbox One. But yeah, I had other things I needed at Target and it was there. And, you know, anyway, so I have that. I have not set it up.
Jump exactly. in your cart.
Exactly. And now I have to figure out what I do with the Xboxes, because the Xbox that is in the family room will come in my office, but that means I won't have the 360 in my office, which means I won't have Media Center in my office. And if I still want Media Center in my office, you know what I might end up setting up, which I've never used, is my Seton Echo.
Oh, there you go. Or you could just run the 360 and the Xbox One together.
That's crazy.
You could run the 360 through the Xbox One.
No, too much. No, not going to do that. Actually, it's funny that you say that, because I think, if I remember correctly, I believe Marcus tweeted about doing something like that a couple of weeks ago. So I know it's possible, but I'm going to pass on that. That seems a little bit too weird. And then I started talking with one of our listeners who was helping me think through the whole 4K TV thing, because I've done like no research. Remember, I think I mentioned that last time. Mm-hmm. I've done no research. Well, good thing he already did it for me. Uh-oh. I ended up, I'm going to be getting a new OLED TV for Christmas.
Oh my gosh.
I'm very excited.
Is that one of those LG OLEDs?
It is.
With the WebOS interface?
It is.
Oh, man.
It's my favorite smart TV interface. Enough so that I might even start using the smart TV apps, because Plex is available on it.
Oh, nice.
As is everything else.
Right.
Netflix, YouTube, Hulu, Amazon. The only stuff that isn't there is the Apple TV stuff, and I have an Apple TV for that.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That WebOS interface on those TVs is really, really nice.
It is. It's very good. I'm very impressed with it. I think they've done a better job than any other manufacturer in terms of creating an ecosystem that is easy to understand and navigate for smart TV. So, cool stuff. So, that comes sometime in December. I don't know if I'm going to be allowed to take it out of the box before Christmas. We'll see, but I'm looking forward to that. So that is what is and will be going on in my entertainment center.
All right. Well, for me, I hurt myself badly over the weekend, so I got to watch a lot of TV because I couldn't do anything else. I watched basically the entire fourth season of Homeland this weekend.
Woo-hoo!
The whole thing. I probably need to rewatch the last episode of that season, because I was really on the pain meds that were really putting me to sleep, and I kept dozing off. And it seemed like nothing important at all happened in the season finale of season four, and that just doesn't seem possible. So I think I'm going to rewatch that episode. But overall, I really liked season four of Homeland, and I'm looking forward to starting season five. Then I made the big jump to really becoming a cord cutter this weekend. I had AT&T UVerse show up at my house on Saturday, and they ran their internet service into my home. And I actually haven't killed my cable yet, but it's all disconnected. I need to call them and cancel. And I'm no longer a cable TV guy anymore. I've got an over-the-air antenna hooked up to an HD home run tuner, and that's connected to a couple of different things in my entertainment center. But you know what it's not hooked up to? That's not the surprising part, Richard. The surprising part is what it's not hooked up to, Media Center PC.
Oh, Josh.
I don't know, Josh, if this will be a permanent thing, but I was trying to clean up the disaster of wires that's behind my entertainment center, so that when the AT&T guy showed up, he didn't say, that looks like a fire hazard. I'm not installing this for you. So while I was doing that, I needed to to move the PC out of the way anyway. And I thought, I'll just get this out of here for now so that it's a little bit tidier for when the AT&T guy shows up, and we'll kind of go from there. I haven't hooked it back up yet. I'm at the very least going to hook that PC back up to get a bunch of those recordings off of there to potentially use that MP Convert app that we talked about at the beginning of the show to convert a bunch of my recordings to throw them into Plex. But instead, I'm using this as some time to really focus on really thoroughly testing Plex DVR and HD Home Run DVR. So that's what I've been doing this weekend and what I'm continuing to do. I don't really want to talk about the results. I've had some issues with some things, but I need to figure out what's my fault and what isn't before I start bashing either of them on the show. But it's working out fine, and the family hasn't really cared that much because, well, Jen like never watches TV at all anymore, and the kids are mostly watching YouTube and Netflix, so they're not really missing a lot. So we'll see. It might not be gone forever, but it may, because I also don't really want to keep supporting that box that I built in 2009.
Yeah, that's the thing. And in your case, you have a much older home theater PC than I do. So getting that up and running and sustainable for another year or so of life seems, I don't know, if I were in your shoes, I would think that seems kind of like a futile effort.
Well, that plus, like, there's still the fact that the guide data is terrible. Like, yeah, we still have guide data. And that's what I kept going back to, is as long as Media Center's got guide data, it's not dead yet. Sure, it's got guide data, but it's still kind of miserable. I still find myself every Saturday afternoon when I want to know what college football games are on, I grab my phone and I go to zaptoit.com's TV listings, you know, the old provider for Media Center guide data, to find out what college football games are on what channel. Because the Media Center guide data just says teams to be determined on every single game in the guide.
And that is just absolutely ludicrous.
Yes.
Ludicrous.
Completely
worthless. The company that now owns TiVo and owns the patents for TV guides isn't capable of populating them with useful data.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awful. It's awful. But Richard, that's not all it for the weekend. Cause I also got some itches that needed to be scratched last week, and it was Black Friday. So I replaced my ancient TV.
Wow. Okay.
So
okay.
My 720p plasma that I bought in 2010 is now going to be replaced by a Vizio M series that is 4K with HDR, Dolby Vision, and HDR10, going from 42 inches to 55 inches. And I am thrilled. But like you, there's one major downside. It's a Christmas present.
Oh, yeah.
So Jen's
not using it yet.
Jen's not letting us have it. And the kids don't know about it and won't know about it until Christmas morning. So that stinks. Although I had to make sure it worked. You know, I didn't want there to be any issues. So I had it delivered to work. It got there today. I set it up to make sure everything worked in case I needed to send it back and get it replaced before Christmas. It's pretty awesome. It's really, really nice. And like you, if there's a 4K display in the house, you have to have a way to watch 4K movies and play 4K games. And darn it, there were just too many good deals.
You have to.
Yeah, I kind of scored really, really well on my deal, because yesterday Amazon had Xbox One S bundles for $212.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I got the white Battlefield 1 bundle coming tomorrow. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. Really, really
$212.
Yeah. With a game. Yeah. With a brand new game.
That is insane.
It is.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah. So kind of a big deal for both of us in our entertainment centers.
So what I think our listeners can take away from this episode is that we're going to be able to fully talk about the new Xbox experience, fully talk about 4K video, and have no clue what's going on anymore with Media Center.
Well, fortunately, there's not a whole lot going on with Media Center anymore. I'm not going to like burn my Media Center PC to the ground or anything like that. It's still going to be there. I just don't know that I'll be using it. So we'll see. We'll see.
All right.
All right. So I guess that does it for the show. If you guys would like to pass on your latest dealings in your own entertainment centers or your thoughts and feedback on the latest news, you can do that in a lot of ways. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook. I'm trying to do a better job of keeping the Facebook page updated, facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google+. We've got an email address. It's entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Richard also has another podcast that you should be checking out. It's called Home On, and it's about home automation and control news. And there was a familiar voice on the latest episode, Richard.
Yeah, it's this guy I've talked to before. His name is Doug Evans. And
man,
I'm just not giving you a break on this one. My my special guest for the show was an interview that I had at the Smart Kitchen Summit, and that was Doug Evans, the founder of Juicero. But Josh was kind enough to join me and talk through the news that's been going on and the mail that we had received and talk a little bit about some of the information from Juicero. And I had a great time with you. I'm glad you were able to join.
It's always a blast to be on that show.
And then in our next episode, Dave Evans, I know this is confusing, Doug Evans and then Dave Evans, who is the co-founder and CTO of Stringify, is going to be talking about their product. And you know how I'm always complaining that IFTTT doesn't have enough T's? I didn't come up with that. I stole that from Jamie Siminoff from Ring. But he's right. It doesn't do enough stuff. And Stringify solves that problem. So I'm very excited to be presenting that conversation in the next episode that'll be coming out.
Cool. All right. Well, if you like our shows, you should definitely subscribe to them so you never miss an episode. But if you want to help us out, the best way that you can do that is head over to iTunes and leave us a rating or a review. It helps a lot of other people find the show, helps us a ton. We really, really appreciate it. If you're not a subscriber, you can find us not only on iTunes, we're on Pocket Cast, we're on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. We're all over the place. Go and hit the subscribe button.
And I also want to mention that we have a ton of new content out on the site. As I mentioned previously, this is kind of high season for tech, and there's a lot going on, and we're trying to cover a bunch of it as we get ready for CES. So if you haven't been to the site recently, because there hasn't been a whole lot up there except for these shows, give us a visit. You're going to find a lot of new content.
Yep, definitely. And then come back to the site and join us as we record these shows. We record Entertainment 2.0 live most Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's not always that day or time, though, so follow us on Twitter and we'll always tweet when the show is going to be. And then you can chat with us while we're recording and even get your own two cents into the podcast while we're recording it. It's a ton of fun and we love having you guys show up for it. But that's going to do it for episode 389. I'm Josh Pollard, he's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 390. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.